Good afternoon. It's a real pleasure to be here this afternoon and being here sober with so many wonderful people. And I'd just like to take this first opportunity to thank the committee and especially thank Philip for asking me to speak today. It's because without you, the people of AA, that I could not stay sober. I'm Ray, and I am a very grateful alcoholic. And during my talk, I think we're going to laugh. I know I'm going to cry. And you may too. But that's my story. And unlike a lot of the stories we hear and a lot of the lives that are shared with us in meetings like this, it gives us a chance to reflect again on what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. And through my 18 years of recovery, I've seen a lot of people come and go through the program. When I first got to the program, it was people like my friend here, Ralph, who was there, Sam, and a lot of people who have gone before us, who shared their lives with me and their road to recovery. I was asked last night, what are you going to say? You know, are you nervous? Well, I was asked that this morning if I was nervous. And it's not about being nervous, it's about living up to being that vehicle that our Creator has chosen for to send the message, and I've been chosen today to relay a message to all the people I love in the program, you, even though we have not met. I love you dearly because I know the road that you're on and the commitment that you've made to yourselves and to the Creator in staying sober one day at a time. And if you're a newcomer out there who is trying to find out a way on how to sincerely make that commitment, you're in the right place. Because it is a commitment not only to yourself and to your families, but it is a commitment to the Creator. And again, I am very grateful to be a recovering alcoholic, for without the help of the Creator and His help He's given me one day at a time, I could not be sober today. No matter how many days I've lived in recovery, today is what I have. And for that, I'm very grateful. You know, I grew up in Isleta, I was born in 49 and grew up in the 50s and early 60s in my childhood on the reservation in Isleta. And it was a childhood of loneliness, because I lived away out in the outside the Pueblo a couple of miles and didn't have a lot of, kids my own age to play with. So I remember my childhood being kind of lonely. And I worked hard. You know, my folks made me work hard. And I'm grateful that I got to know my grandparents and grew up with them and learned a lot of values from them. Spiritual values, which later on I would rediscover. But that spirituality that all of us Native people grow up with, once we're exposed to it in our native ways and in our pueblos or tribes or whatever, it's with us all the time, and nobody can take that away from us. Not even alcohol. But as I grew up, I had a life of loneliness and trying to compete. I was small for my size and always competing with kids at school and being put down and that sort of thing. So I had a lot of low self-esteem issues that as a child, it was very hurtful. And that, in later life, I would identify some of the things that I drank about. And as I got older and got through high school and discovered what booze was about, and with my friends and going out and partying by the river and God's Little Acre, as we used to call it, you know, we find our ways to be part of the group, you know, and partied a lot. Got in trouble right away. But you know what? I was part of something. I was being accepted. You know, and I was 10 foot tall and bulletproof. You know, and that I carried that when I went into the military. I was always trying to prove something. My dear wife that's sitting here now, I first met her in 1967, in Denver, Colorado. I partied a lot, and she did not like someone drinking, and I chased her out of my life. She left Denver, and I truly loved her, but I loved booze better. And I had to do what I had to do. So I went through the next few years. I finished school in Denver and got in a lot of trouble up there. Ended up in jail. I had to serve a year's probation and I finished school and was on the verge of getting drafted and joined the military. It's a little funny story because it goes to the pride and ego and thinking I'm 10 foot tall and bulletproof. I joined the Marine Corps. Well, I just had to fill out all I had to do was sign the paperwork and I would have been inducted into the Marines. And that was in 1969. And many of you know what was happening in the world in 1969. But I wanted to do what I wanted to do. So that day I was on my way downtown Denver, going down to the recruiter's office to sign my paperwork. I was hungover from the night before because we had partied. And I passed the newspaper machine. And on the headlines in the newspaper machine was counting the number of dead Marines in some ambush that had taken place in Vietnam. That caused me to have second thoughts. So I went to the Marine recruiter, and right across the aisleway, the hallway, was the Navy recruiter, so I joined the Navy. But needless to say, I still did see combat in Vietnam. My ego and a lot of other things caused me to volunteer, and I served on river patrol boats in Southeast Asia in the Mekong Delta, and later on board a ship. But the Navy is about drinking. I mean, we had the military. I drank a lot in the military. Got in a lot of trouble. But it was a life that was cut out for me. Because, again, I was always trying to prove something. Always trying to live up to my ego. Getting back to my relationship with Priscilla. She left Denver. I chased her out of my life, and I was not to see her for another 23 years. But I'll tell you a little bit more about that story in a little bit. I got out of the military in 75, came back to Albuquerque, and found a job. And it was a great job because all the bosses drank. We traveled a lot. Boy, talk about paid geographics. You know, I was given an expense account, a credit card, a boss that was a drunk, and we had a ball. And that was my life for about 16 years, was that life of travel. Basically, some anonymity thrown in there, because wherever I went, nobody knew me. So I could pretty much get away with all kinds of things. At that time, I was married to my second wife at that time, and I was hardly home. But that too, it almost cost me my job, because towards the end of my drinking career, I had rolled up quite an expense on a company credit card, and it was brought to my attention to get that squared away, curb my drinking, or lose my job. So I took an easier, softer way. I think I'll go to an outpatient treatment program. So I did that, and of course, when you take the easier, softer way, what happens? We usually face the consequences. It wasn't very long, another 6 or 7 months before I went out again. My very first encounter with Alcoholics Anonymous was, I was in the military yet, and I had been, oh gosh, I had been in one heck of a drunk over 3 or 4 days, and I had taken some leave, and I just stayed in San Diego. And I was on a bus, and I just really got sick, just started having real bad withdrawals. And I ended up in the infirmary, and they called a guy from AA. So I went to this AA meeting with this stranger, and all I could remember about that AA meeting was there's a whole bunch of donuts and a lot of coffee. And I didn't listen, you know. But you know what? There's one thing that stuck in my mind for the next, I guess at least the next 10 years, was the fact that I had been to an AA meeting. How dare I? You know? I mean, geez, I'm not a drunk. You know, that's for drunks. But I had been to an AA meeting, and you know, they talk about once that seed is planted, it was there. It was there, and I hated it. Because from that time on, there was a little voice telling me I had a problem. You know, I was in a wreck down here in the South Valley, where I almost took the lives of a mother and her 3 kids out by Archie's Bar down in the South Valley. I drank for another 5 years. You know, that didn't faze me. I went to my next AA meeting when I went to the outpatient treatment program here in Albuquerque. I went to a few AA meetings and cried around, you know, and so poor me, and, you know, told my morbid story, you know, and I even went to Native American group, and I think that's why I have some laughter here in the sideline. Maybe Ralph remembers, I don't know. But I had this crocodile tears coming down, oh man, poor me, you know, I'm just drunk, you know, and I relapsed. Well, I did relapse hard. And the Thanksgiving holidays of 1985, I had drank for about 5 straight days, and pulled out a rifle out of my closet. Nobody was home. Locked myself in the room in my home with a couple of cases of beer and two quarts of whiskey. Took my rifle out, and this is how self-confident I was at the time. I put a full clip in the rifle. So I guess I thought I was so self-confident, you know. I thought I was going to miss, I guess. But fortunately for me, the Creator had me put that rifle down, and I picked up a phone and I made a phone call. And I called this guy, bless his heart, who had a lot of patience with me, Richard S. And I still consider him my sponsor, but at that time he was there. And he made the phone calls for me, and 3 days later, I was in treatment center in Wickenburg, Arizona. And that's where I finally made the conscious decision that I was going to stay sober 1 day at a time. Because up to that point, again, it was a life of an ego, low self-esteem, self-pity. All those things that we talk about in meeting were eating me up alive. I had taken hostages in my life, as they say, with the wives that I had up to that point. You know, I was abusive. Abused my family. My folks hated seeing me at Christmas time because they didn't know whether that Christmas tree was going to end up on the other side of the room again. It was a life that my family was scared of me. But one day when I finally woke up off of the withdrawals I was having, the DTs I was going through, I was walking from the dorm area of the treatment center to the cafeteria, and the sun was coming over that eastern horizon, and I felt something. I felt a warmth that I can never be able to truly describe, because it was like an embrace. And I turned to face the sun in my own native way, gave thanks. And I told the Creator, I can't do this by myself. I need your help. I need your help to stay sober one day at a time. Because I know there's something that I need to do in my life. But I can't do it alone. And I felt that warmth, and I just stood there absorbing that love that I was finally giving to the Great Spirit, as I understood Him, to help me do what I had to do. And from that day on, I was on the road to recovery. And I've never looked back, only to reflect of where I've been, what it was like, and what I had to look forward to by listening to people like yourself. That's when I really started to be willing to listen to people like yourselves so that I could understand what it really means to be sober. It's not just not taking a drink. It's about living our lives on life's terms. What does that mean? You know, we hear it a lot. But each and every one of us, as we go about our daily living, we have certain turns in the road, certain obstacles we have to face. Do we have to do it alone? We don't. I tried to do it alone and tried to do it my way, but you know what? All I ended up doing is hurting people and facing a lot of consequences. But I don't have to do that. And as I started to learn and started going to all the meetings that I had to attend to keep myself sober and to allow myself to listen and allow myself to share the things that I needed to share, it had to be that way. I had to make a lot of sacrifices. So I, when I got back from treatment, I immersed myself in the program. I mean, I really got in the program. I went to a daily meeting every morning, just like clockwork, before work, for about 5 years straight. One thing my sponsor had told me, he says, that first year is for you. After that, you got to give back what the program is giving back to you. So fortunately for myself and some really neat people, and some of them are here today, helped me start the meeting, start an AA meeting in Isleta. And that was really a rewarding experience for me to get that meeting started and have the support that we did. And I want to thank those people who helped get that meeting started way back in 86 and 87. And it's continued again, and it's doing well. But I had to do those things. I had to immerse myself in the program to really get a handle on what I needed to do to live. And to get over the things that I had endured through my life that I thought I was doing on my own. You know, the experiences I had in Vietnam were things I had to contend with, I had to deal with. So they were not very good experiences. The experiences I had in relationships. Like I said earlier, I took a lot of hostages. I took advantage of people. And it was something that I had to, again, rely on the steps in order to have that sense of courage to do what I had to do to make amends. And then something very miraculous happened in my life one evening. And I need to share this because it is a gift. I was on the phone with my sponsor one evening. And I know it was on Wednesday night because I had just gone back from our Wednesday night Pueblo meeting. And I was on the phone with my sponsor. And I was sitting on the couch. I was alone, and I was about to, I got done with a conversation and the phone rang, and it scared the heck out of me because I was holding it in my hands and the phone rang, and this voice on the other end said, Ray? I said, yes. And she said, this is Priscilla. I've only known one Priscilla my whole life. And that's that lady sitting there. 23 years later, after she went out of my life, the Creator decided I was ready. He decided that I finally deserved this wonderful woman. And my life had gone full circle. I had to go through what I had to go through, do the things I had to do in order for me to have this reward of such a wonderful lady. And we had been through a lot together. I mean, in the loss of her parents and supporting one another, and her supporting me in the program. She's supporting me here this afternoon. And we've gone through a lot together, but only because of our deep love for one another and our love for our family, and through what we had to depend on our spirituality as far as God and through us, gotten us through these things. And we have six wonderful grandchildren that we've never seen you come. And that's a gift. But this program is as we just read in the reading of the steps and the traditions, it is so when we first get into it, it seems so complicated, but if when we start applying it to our lives on a daily basis, it's when the simplicity really comes out. You know, what is it about surrendering at first? Well, we know how hard that is, but when we apply the principles in all our daily affairs, surrendering to the fact that we can't control other people, surrendering to the fact that we cannot control outcomes. You know, that's why that serenity prayer is so powerful. If you really think about the word, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change. Grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change. It doesn't say grant me the acceptance to it so I can have serenity. And a lot of us try to do that. You know? I do that. I get caught in that trap sometimes, you know? Let me just get through this, then I'll be okay. No, it doesn't happen that way. It says, I'll be okay, and I'll get through this. That's what it really means. Okay means I'll have faith. Big word in our program, right? Having faith. What does that mean? It's believing in our higher power, having faith. The way I was is that, hey, you know, show me. You know, I have to prove it to me. Faith is about just having that courage. Grant me the strength to accept the things that cannot change. courage to change the things I can. And where do we get that courage? Again, back to faith. My Creator is right with me every step of the way. Every step of the way. And with His help, as long as I get my ego out of the way, and my self-centeredness, and my selfishness, I hate those S words, don't you? But you know what? You can do it with the help of the Great Spirit. He'll be there. That's why it's so important to us Native people, and all of us, really, in our own ways, but more so in our Native ways, because that is what we are. You know, I told you a while ago about that flame of spirituality that burns deep within us once we have been exposed and once it's been put there. And it was put there way before it was mentioned to us by our grandfathers. But mine was so far extinguished by booze and my ego and my self-centeredness. It took Alcoholics Anonymous to rekindle that flame and bring me back alive, so that I could appreciate my spirituality. And that's what keeps me going on a day-to-day basis. I start my day out with a prayer. A prayer of gratitude. Thank you for this new day. Thank you for the things you're going to put in front of me today. Good or bad. Because I have no control over that. But to be alive is amazing. To be grateful for the grandchildren that are in my life, the family that I have, the family that I can now appreciate, and before I was blind to. So it's so important that spirituality comes out again, linking it and fortifying it, making it more strong, so that you have that faith, that you can have that courage to change the things you can. And the wisdom to know the difference. Boy, that's the tricky part. But you know what? If I get out of the way and I exercise some humility, that wisdom will come. Because you know what? Humility is something that in this book that I've carried around a long time, and it's full of red marks and green marks and blue marks and all kinds of good things. Of things I've underlined, but humility is kind of has a bad rap, okay? Humility is not being humiliated. You know, ha ha, you, because you're, you know, making a fool out of yourself. Well, I did that a lot, you know? I made a fool out of myself a lot. Sometimes I still do. But it's not humiliation. That's the word that gets. The confusion. Humility is a good thing. It's about living your own life, not somebody else. The other thing about humility is doing my job, whatever that is, accepting it. My job as a grandfather, as a father, as a worker wherever I work, as an employee. My job, in my role as a member of Alcoholics Anonymous in carrying the message, that's the other part of humility. And the third most important one is accepting and doing the Creator's will. If I can do those three things, I am exercising humility to the best of my ability. But if I get off track and start making decisions based on self-centeredness, selfishness, ego, then my motives are all screwed up. I'm going to suffer the consequence. I'm not going to feel good about myself. I'll probably hurt people. I'll probably have to tell a lie. And it goes on and on and on. Then I feel worse. And it could lead to what? It could lead to another drink. Because I am only one drink from another drug. I don't care if it's only been 18 years. And I truly believe that. So from the serenity prayer and its simplicity, but within its power, just that can keep me sober if I understand really what I'm saying. And when we go through the 12 steps, what do those really mean? Accepting that I have no control and I am powerless. Really believe in that. And being able to come to terms with becoming willing to turn my will and my life over to the power greater than myself. You know, that's your first step in trying to become humble. And on through the steps and trying to realize that you have to look at all the errors of your ways and start making those lists of things that you need to come to terms with and then sharing them with another human being. I did that once again here just recently. And the person I shared it with told me, you got to get back into the program. You know, it was more or less a fourth and fifth step I did, and it said, you need to remember again where you've been, and you need to get back in doing 12-step work. So I'm very sincerely thankful to you for allowing me to do that. Because without that key invitation about a month ago to be your speaker today, I wouldn't have been able to carry through and see the Creator does things in our lives. You know, I would have probably put that on the back burner, and I'm being honest with you. But it was brought to my attention. My Creator says, you know, Ray, you need to do this. And I want to put these people in your life, and they're going to make an influence on you, and you're going to do something. So here I am. And I'm truly grateful for that, because the Great Spirit is allowing me to convey a message to you. Today I have a very, very fulfilling life, because, again, I have very a wonderful wife and a family that cares for me, and I have grandsons that are adorable and are healthy. And I have people like you, people that are in this room who help me hear the message that is conveyed at every meeting. And for that, I'm really, really grateful. My friend Shirley is there. I think a lot of the old memories are going through her mind as she reflects on seeing me walk through those doors a couple of times, and that one hit me in the butt the first time I went out and I came back. But you know what? She was there with a hug and she welcomed me back. And she says, are you ready to stay sober? And I said, yeah, truly I am. And I thank you. Because without her and people like her, I wouldn't be here. And I just want you to reflect on what you've heard at meetings and through this conference and through the things that people have shared with you just over coffee. How they've shared a little bit about themselves with you, because the person sharing with you in some respects may feel they're taking a risk. But they need to talk. They need to share. You need to listen. I need to listen. That's why the Great Spirit has allowed us and given us the benefit of being together in a setting like this, so that we can have this opportunity to share what it's been like and share what it's like and to share the things that this program has to offer. And for you newcomers, you are the most important person here. And please, through the course of the day and tomorrow, if we run into each other, I mean, please, let's talk. Let's meet one another and enjoy the fellowship that we are blessed with. Because I love you. I love each and every one of you for what you've done, what you're doing, and what you're doing for me. Because without people like yourselves, with the commitment that you have, and the love that you have for one another in this program of Alcoholics Anonymous, we'd still be in that lonely world of despair and self-loathing and things like that. But this is a program of love. This is a program of acceptance. A program of sharing. And with that, I'd like to share with you something that means a great deal to me. And it says, I sought my soul I could not see. I sought my God, and He eluded me. I sought my brother, and here I found all three. Thank you.